You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. Folks, I've been a fan of magic ever since I was about 5 years old. I used to put on shows in our backyard and at school, and I still remember the time my dad took me to see David Copperfield perform in Houston, Texas. Even today, I still get a thrill whenever I'm at a children's party and someone says, "Guess what? We hired a magician." But one thing I never lose sight of is the first rule of magic: never trust a magician. Filmmaker Ben Berman learned that lesson the hard way when he set out to make a documentary about legendary magician and comedian The Amazing Jonathan. Throughout the 80s and 90s, The Amazing Jonathan was a regular on Letterman, HBO, and his own Comedy Central specials. He performed for presidents and world leaders, and he was one of the longest-running shows in Las Vegas history, until he announced his retirement in 2014 after learning that he had a fatal heart condition and only a year to live. Now, 4 or 5 years later, he's still here and even occasionally performing, which has led some people to wonder if it's all an elaborate hoax. In The Amazing Jonathan documentary, filmmaker Ben Berman attempts to get to the bottom of this question as he follows the magician on his comeback tour, but he quickly finds himself being led down one rabbit hole after another by the wily magician and wondering what's real and what's an illusion. The documentary was nominated for the Grand Jury Prize at this year's Sundance Film Festival, and now it's debuting on Hulu Friday, August 16th. And today, The Amazing Jonathan and Ben Berman join me at the world-famous Magic Castle to talk about the crazy experience of making this movie. Jonathan explains the condition that led to his retirement, what his doctors say 5 years after the diagnosis, and why Jonathan believes that the secret to his survival is either stem cells or meth. Then Ben talks about having to relinquish some control as director and follow The Amazing Jonathan wherever this wild ride took him, including having to contend with a second crew filming a totally different documentary about The Amazing Jonathan. In the end, though, Ben says it all made for a better movie, and he's kind of gotten used to being constantly screwed with. Jonathan reveals that he was never very good at magic as a kid and says he grew up looking up to comedians, not magicians, so he just decided to perform the same tricks, but to do them for laughs. He talks about pioneering the art of deconstructing magic for comedy, his friendship with the mind freak Chris Angel, and how his wife deals with magicians who try to rip off his act. Plus, the psychology of comedy magic, the gamesmanship of elaborate pranks, and Jonathan knows a lot about faking your own death. Coming up with The Amazing Jonathan and Ben Berman in just a moment. The Amazing Jonathan documentary begins as a profile on a uniquely deranged magician who built a career out of shock and deception in the 1980s, but it quickly becomes the bizarre story about the unraveling of his documentarian. Today I'm sitting down with both filmmaker and subject alike at the legendary Magic Castle in Hollywood, Jonathan Sells and Ben Berman. Welcome.
See, he had to do it again. He had to do it again.
There was a take two.
Told him not to use that one, and he had to do it.
Well, guys, I love the documentary, and we're already screwing around with Ben here on the podcast because as soon as you came in, Jonathan told me to hide your mic and tell you that we only had one.
And I wasn't going to share mine.
And you put up with this for the entire film, huh?
Consider me pranked.
Was this just every day on set with him?
Yeah, I don't know. Often, Jonathan likes messing with people. Jonathan,
I do like messing with me. And it wasn't just you. I mean, I didn't mess with you that much.
Just in the fact that I had two other crews doing
a documentary. But otherwise, it was I was focused when I was with Ben.
Yeah.
Ah, sure.
Well, I absolutely love the film, and not just because it's a great documentary, but I'm also a huge fan of magic ever since I was a little kid. I used to do stupid little magic shows in the yard for my little friends and all that, and I called myself Ben the Great, as if a five-year-old...
He calls himself that.
Yeah. Oh, do you? Yeah.
That's on my,
he doesn't even do magic, and he calls himself that.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Here I was a five-year-old kid with the chutzpah to call myself Ben the Great, the nerve.
And what was your repertoire? What was your
My repertoire was all of the tricks that you did, the linking rings and everything, but totally seriously.
Yeah.
Whereas you were kind of parodying all those tricks.
Yeah. But I used to do the same thing. I used to do backyard shows for kids.
Oh, really?
And stuff. Yeah. The zombie ball has been my closing since then. I still close with it. You know?
Yeah.
Basically, it's the same show.
Yeah. What got you started in magic when you were a kid?
I wandered into a magic shop and by mistake and just bought everything I could afford at the time, and then saved up for the rest. You know, I used to love buying magic stuff.
Yeah, what was your big trick in your
My
act?
My first
back
trick
then?
Was the multiplying rabbits. What was your first trick?
My first trick was probably the linking rings, and I was never good at cards. I'm still not good at cards.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm not too great at any of it. I never had very good luck with magic, man.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't either.
You made
you made a career out of just
massacring,
making fun of it, and playing around with it.
Did you ever go to a magic shop and buy any tricks?
No, but when I was young, I remember my dad took me to see Copperfield in our hometown, I think. And
mine too.
Yeah.
How funny.
Yeah, and I remember a kid flew or something. Like at the end of the show, a kid flew, and I was like, I could have been that kid.
Yeah.
It was weird. I think
Who
I remember
knows?
That
We're
correct.
Probably about the same age, so that might have been the same tour. I saw him in Houston, Texas.
Oh, I saw him in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Maybe that same tour.
You never know. Yeah, I mean, now
how old are
I don't
you?
Play. I don't, what?
How old are you?
I'm 45 as of July.
I'm 36, going on 37.
Oh, wow. Oh, you're way younger than me.
I look old, I know. Are you? I'm not saying you're old.
It's the beard.
Copperfield
I am old. I
tours
feel old.
Every year, every second.
Does he really?
Yeah, he does. He never stops.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I was no good at it, so I gave it up. But I still am into magic, which is why I love this movie. I collect the posters. By the way, we have a lot of the same posters, like the Carter the Great posters, Grover George, Thurston, and all those great old...
Oh, you collect the magic posters?
Yeah, from the 20s. I love those, just the colors and
everything.
Where
do you get yours from?
Let me think. Nielsen Magic, I've gotten a few. And then there's an auction... what is it? Potter and Potter auctions.
So they're real magic posters.
Yeah. I love that.
They're
stuff.
Worth a lot of money.
Yeah, and I love the stories of those guys. Like half of them were just bunco artists, and I think like Alexander or someone was like a
posters,
murderer and
those
stuff.
Posters used to be crazy. Put on sides of buildings, like the 7 or 8 of them
in
a row. You know, and now each one of them's worth about $10,000. You know, $5,000.
Yeah, it's insane. And it's fitting that we're doing this at the Magic Castle because, as I recall, I think that this was the place where you did your last performance when you retired from the stage, 5 years ago?
Yeah, the first time.
The first retirement. And then I went out and did the one with Ben.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, the first time I said I was quitting, I was here. And then I didn't do shows for 3 years after the ones I did here.
And, Ben, what was it that interested you about Amazing Jonathan's story? What was the story that you thought that you were telling when you set out to make this movie?
Well, that's a good question. But first, I became aware of Jonathan when I was like 12 or 13 years old through, you know, good old Comedy Central specials of his and stuff. And then when I heard that he was his health was not great, and that I also heard that he was doing some pretty serious drugs, and I was like, oh, that's, you know, I remember that guy. I wonder what's going on in his life now. And this was before you actually decided to come back and do that tour and play again. So I was like, let's reach out to him. Maybe there's an interesting – he's a very interesting guy, interesting character. Let's go explore that.
How did all of this evolve from there? I mean, it sounds like
terribly.
It quickly kind of – your plan for the movie kind of quickly unraveled, huh?
Yeah, so I was filming with Jonathan for 6 months, and that was in the time of him, in the after three years, you know, not you weren't performing. You were kind of, you and Anna were living in Vegas and just kind of hanging out, and then Jonathan mentioned and kind of announced that he was going to perform again. He was going to go do this kind of mini tour, and that's. That's the movie. Basically, I didn't really know what the movie was going to be before doing it, and it just kind of took one step after another, and you know, documented him on this on this kind of coming out of retirement thing. And
he then shot 2 years worth of footage and didn't use any of it in the documentary.
What do you mean?
You used the go kart race, and you have a lot of footage you didn't touch.
Yeah,
there's plenty. Of course, plenty. In making a documentary, you film a lot, and then only use some, but.
I want the good stuff.
Yeah, good.
Well, Ben, you typically write for a lot of narrative projects for TV. So doing a documentary like this must be a bit of a departure for you. You don't have a shot list and lots of pre-pro and all that. I mean, you kind of have to let the subject lead you wherever he goes. And in this case, who the hell knows where that could be?
Exactly. No, that's been one of the bigger takeaways of this project for me is, yeah, historically, I've worked in comedy television, directing and editing comedy TV. And yes, I would prepare a lot for every day on set. You know, time is money. You have to move quick. Mm-hmm. And I would plan everything out, right? And then doing this documentary, you have to get used to. In order to have a documentary of quality, you have to let the documentary and the subject of the documentary and just the story take shape. You can't control it. So luckily, I think we came upon an incredible story, more layered than originally even thought, and it wasn't. I was just responsive to let's allow that to be part of the narrative. Let's not force what I thought it was.
It's like, yeah. He had definitely a system of doing things right, and he floundered to find the end, but then. When he found it, boy, did he find it, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, without giving too much away. Yeah, there are a lot of surprises.
It blew me away.
Yeah, and I suppose that's to be expected when, you know, you kind of know that you're getting into a wild ride when your subject is part Willy Wonka, part Rumpelstiltskin.
I think Jonathan likes messing with people. I think Jonathan himself doesn't often have a plan, you know, and he just kind of goes with where his instincts tell him to go, and sometimes your instincts are wicked.
Yeah,
like in a
yeah. Well, I mean, what is it? The first rule of magic is never trust a magician.
Well, that's I find it very interesting that set out to make a documentary on an illusionist, on a magician, Jonathan. You know, why should I be surprised that there were a lot of twists and turns and a lot of illusions within it? You know, often it's hard to tell what's real and what's not.
Yeah. How do you think I feel?
Exactly.
I live that. I live with that constant.
Now, just to go back a bit, for anyone who doesn't know, Jonathan, you retired from performing in 2014 because you had been diagnosed with a degenerative heart condition.
Yeah, I have cardiomyopathy.
How long did your doctors give you to live back then?
They told me this. They told me a year to a year and a half. And if I didn't stop doing meth, they said most likely a year or even before a year was done. So I had a decision to make. Do I stop doing meth and live 6 months longer, or do I just go? I didn't want to stop, so I didn't stop, and I'm still doing it. And I think there's I don't know if it's something keeping me going. Maybe it could be that. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean,
I had a doctor tell me, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. Now, that was an open invitation to me.
I think you're bending the truth on that one. I think you're taking that.
I am. It's the drugs talking.
Yeah, drugs. So for so long, it's part. Can I ask a question?
Sure, sure.
Can I interview him for a second?
Please.
For almost the entire making of the 2.5 years that it took to make this documentary, when we would, you know, there were many conversations about including this in the movie and not. And now it seems like
the drug use.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. You're so open and have so much openness with it.
I've always been open with it. I've never hidden it from my friends. Well, you don't go to the press with that. You know, hey, I'm a meth. Call the news and go, you want to do a good story about
me
doing meth?
This is press.
You know, yeah. I mean,
no, I decided when we made the documentary that we said we were going to be 100% honest.
Yeah.
So, I figured I was not going to be here to see the documentary. Right. So I figured, what do I have to lose? Mm-hmm. And plus, I told you, my manager said, you know, it's all right if you say it, but just don't show it because it doesn't look good.
Right.
It turns a lot of people off. And it's that's okay if it turns a lot of people off.
I guess you're
off.
Right. So you're just saying it now. So that's true to form.
I definitely didn't think that. I've been trying to last long enough just to see this premiere that we're doing this week.
Uh-huh.
You know, you take milestones like that and go, I hope I'm alive to see that. And so far, so good. You know.
Well, you know what? We're going to keep you alive for a long time because there's going to be a UK premiere. There's going to be Israel. We sold the film to Israel. There's plenty more.
Retrospective.
Well, I've been doing re-release. A lot of things that my heart is causing damage from stem cells. I'm doing stem cell therapy.
And
it's repairing a lot of my stuff.
Really?
You do look good.
Yeah. I mean, I feel as good as I've ever felt because everything that's happened to me, like my feet, I couldn't. Well, they wanted to take my foot off. I said no. They wanted my legs stop working for a while.
Because you also have diabetes, right?
Right. Yeah. I was in a wheelchair for a while and couldn't walk. And stem cells, I think, have brought all that back.
Talk about magic.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's totally illegal. It's ridiculous, you know?
Stem cells is the original magic.
Yeah. What did your doctor say? Here we are, what, 4 or 5 years since he gave you one and a half years to live? Is he just amazed?
Yeah, but he knows that I'm doing stem cells. Through another doctor that was smart enough to say, hey, look, I can get these on the black market. Uh-huh. As long as you pay cash for them, I'll keep shooting you with them and we'll see what happens.
Okay. You know, so that counteracts the meth.
A lot of doctors.
Or maybe it's the meth in stem cell cocktail.
You know what? I don't think the meth has done me really. I mean, you see a lot of bad stuff happen to before and after pictures of people on meth.
Yeah.
But you got to take into consideration, I've got millions of dollars. I'm not one of these guys living on the street who's going to be showing me the before and after picture. Is going to be like, you know, I take care of myself to a degree. After doing meth, you know, I do, you know, I try to, counterbalance.
You run 5 miles.
Yeah, I do. I go hiking every day. I eat nothing but veggies.
Uh-huh. Do you think that it frustrates those people who are maybe looking for some kind of celebrity cautionary tale in your story? Here?
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, I'm not trying to give off a positive drug message. Mm-hmm. I said it affects everybody differently, and it just happened to affect me. You know, I've been doing drugs since I was 16 years old. You know, one drug got me off, another drug got me off, another drug, all the way down the line. Yeah. So, but it's never made me miss a show. I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for meth. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have written what I've written and performed.
Yeah,
You say it in the movie. You say that the story that your life is right now is not the typical story that people are looking for. People want that kind of, what is it like, you know, one of those bio docs of, okay, this guy starts doing drugs. He has
everything. He loses everything.
Yeah, exactly.
He stops doing drugs. He gets it all back.
Right. But
that's
not
what they want. Yeah.
Everyone wants a clean, clear story like that, but life is not clean and clear.
No, my story is I had nothing. I started doing drugs. I got everything, and I kept everything through drugs. Then who wants that message?
So are you afraid to stop meth now?
I am. I don't want to stop. I don't want to stop doing it. I mean, something in my head says I want to stop doing it because I'm a prisoner to it. Mm-hmm. You know, but every time I start thinking, hey, I should quit, that other voice takes over that's so loud in my head, prevalent is the voice of the meth going, fuck you, you're not stopping. You know, you're a prisoner of it. I've had to go to Russia and take it to Russia. I've had to sneak it into Japan. I've had to sneak it into every country I've ever played in.
Yeah, that's
and
a
it's,
magic trick.
It's really scary. I brought it to Australia where the drug dogs were coming at me, and I luckily saw Olivia Newton-John going through customs, and her daughter knew who I was, and I saddled up to those two and got through customs with my drugs. You know, it's scary.
No one searches Olivia Newton-John in Australia.
It's scary. I don't carry them with me anymore like I used to, you know. But, it's definitely a different ballgame.
Now, there's a scene in the film where, Ben, you appear to do meth with Jonathan. Was that real?
You know, the whole, when asked this in
or is this a legal situation that we would
we were going to be honest with this documentary, Ben.
But this is the press.
What's the answer?
They show
you doing it in documentary.
No, they don't.
They show you with a black box.
They are me.
Yeah,
I don't show myself.
Well, you showed yourself doing it then.
Okay. No. It pauses, and you. We can't reveal that. But basically, in the film, the answer. it's not answered if I do it or not, right? That's intentional. Okay.
That's why I'm answering it. I'm answering it for him. He did it.
One doesn't know.
Well, yeah, because
one knows, and he did it.
Here's the thing.
He's a liar.
I am not a liar.
He's an illusionist.
One thing I am not.
That's
and you
what
know
I was
that.
He's an illusionist.
Don't say I'm a liar. I am an illusionist.
He's not.
A lot
he's
of these illusions that you do make it look like you're cutting your arm or driving a nail through your tongue. Could you make it look like you're smoking something?
Do you think that he just brought it to his mouth and then said "cut" to his crew and they didn't show it? Why was he sitting the next day in a windstorm?
All right, now we're just telling them the movie.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with the amazing Jonathan and Ben Berman when we come back in just a minute. Everyone knows about the risks of driving drunk. You could get in a crash, people could get hurt or killed. But here are some surprising statistics. Almost 29 people in the United States die every day in alcohol-impaired vehicle crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. Even though drunk driving fatalities have fallen by a third in the last three decades, drunk driving crashes still claim more than 10,000 lives each year. Drunk driving can have a big impact on your wallet, too. You could get arrested and incur huge legal expenses. You could possibly even lose your job. So what can you do to prevent drunk driving? Plan a safe ride home before you start drinking. Designate a sober driver or call a taxi. If someone you know has been drinking, take their keys and arrange for them to get a sober ride home. You just might be saving their life. We all know the consequences of driving drunk, but one thing's for sure. You're wrong if you think it's no big deal. Drive sober or get pulled over. It's summertime, and summer is prime ice cream season. In my house, a backyard barbecue or a day by the pool just isn't complete without a cone or a bowl of Ben & Jerry's. For me, it has to be chocolate chip cookie dough or chocolate fudge brownie. My wife's go-to is a Ben & Jerry's classic, Cherry's Garcia. And it's not just great on a hot summer day. I'll admit that I've been known to sneak into the freezer for a little midnight treat. I like to leave it out for a minute or so and work my way around the edge of the pint as the sides melt. That's the only way to do it, folks. You gotta go outside in. Once I even got caught enjoying Ben & Jerry's for breakfast. Chocolate chip cookie dough on a waffle with some syrup. Now that's how you start your morning. The way I see it, whether it's morning, afternoon, or late at night, when the temperatures rise, there's just no wrong time for a few scoops of Ben & Jerry's. Treat yourself to your favorite flavor anywhere ice cream is sold, or find a new favorite at benjerry.com. That's BENJERRY.com. And now, back to the podcast.
Going back to this heart condition that you have, there are a lot of people who are skeptical because you are a magician, and they think that it's like an Andy Kaufman-esque prank. Can you understand where they're coming from,
yeah,
given
I can,
your history
but what is,
and your career?
What would be the prank? What would be the benefit for me to lose all my work, to not make money or be able to get booked for the last 4 years now?
Yeah.
To be in and out of the hospitals just as a joke, sitting in there for a week at a time, just going, I got them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
okay.
my
that would be a real commitment.
My dream,
to the prank.
Yeah, my dream of a prank would be to fake my death, mm-hmm. not to fake my illness. You know, I would like to disappear and see how people react, thinking I'm gone, and then come back because it's never been done before. And everyone always says Andy Kaufman's doing it, but he hasn't. He hasn't mm-hmm. done it yet, so therefore it's never been done in the history of the world. That there's a very few things that you can say have never been done. That's one of them. And I wanted to do that. I checked with the legal team and everything. I researched it, sat with a group
Turns
of lawyers.
Turns out it's actually very illegal.
It's very illegal. And the repercussions of doing it are outweighing the good. You know, I would love to do that.
But Jonathan, he seems to be, he can commit, he commits to pranks.
Yeah, if I was going to do that, I would set it up by doing just what we're doing now. If I was going to disappear, so if I do disappear.
Well, you heard it first.
Yeah, you guys just wonder whether I'm coming back in 5 to 6 years.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is, what if you die in that 5 to 6 years? It's not much of a prank.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
At some point, you have to reveal yourself. Do you tell your mom? Yeah. What do you tell your family? Can they keep your secret? There's a lot to it.
Is it a prank? Here's the question. Is it a prank if only you know? Do you have to reveal it?
No, but everybody that knows and loves you, I mean, your mom could die from the shock of the news. Certainly she would.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Your sisters would, you know. Yeah. But then again, if you tell them and they're interrogated by the police, are they good enough to keep your secret? You know, there's too much to it. Who gets your money?
I'll take it.
Who do you trust with all your money? You know,
me.
You need it now.
I do.
I made you all your money, Ben. That's
right. Wow, you made. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, well, we made it.
Well, we'll see.
You know, I want.
What do you mean we? There's another thing. There's another lie. He's now a rich man.
I'm not.
You will be.
Yeah, the rumor is that Hulu paid $2 million for this movie.
Yeah, it's not like I make $2 million.
No,
everyone knows
you
that,
have to.
Right.
You have to pay
the finance.
But it's a documentary. How much overhead do you have on a doc?
Yeah,
let's be
not
honest.
Much.
But it's not.
Least,
it's not.
He
my
gets
problem.
At least half of it.
Okay. That's not true at all.
Oh my God! If you don't get at least half of it, you got screwed.
I'm well. Then consider me extremely screwed.
Oh man.
Okay, I don't want to start a fight.
Yeah, this
here,
is.
Guys.
Is this Forbes?
I want you to get. I want you to be rich from it.
Well, I know. Nice. I would like to be. You can pay me separately.
I have by giving you my story.
Yeah, thank you. And then me fucking it up.
No, you didn't fuck it up. You made it great.
There you go. Well, you heard it here first.
Yeah. Wow. I love you.
An honest compliment.
I wouldn't be sitting here doing promo for it if I hated it.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I appreciate it, Jonathan.
The other one's really good, though.
You got to see the other one. It is really good.
Yeah, I mean, can I give that away a little bit
sure.
or part of it? I mean, part of the fun of
it's
this
away.
Documentary.
It's given away.
Maybe not at the
it's
time.
Given away literally.
Google I mean, Amazing Jonathan
the press
documentary.
Is out there on
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
At a certain point, Ben is filming this documentary and then finds out there's a second documentary crew filming a second documentary. And I guess you're told
Did
that
you
they
see
were
it?
Oscar winners. Yeah, oh yeah. Well, I didn't see the second documentary.
Oh, you haven't seen it.
No, I haven't. I only saw this one. Why is it way better than this one?
No, it's not way better. I like them both equally. They're both different subjects. You know, they're, wouldn't you have to say they're both different things?
I certainly wouldn't say I like them both equally. But
well, it's because you're a little prejudiced there. But I like
of course.
I like them both equally.
Yeah. So you're
always amazing.
I do.
Always
amazing
on YouTube.
I absolutely support everyone watching Always Amazing. There's no question about it. It continues the story, our story. It's it's the full experience. So check it out.
Yeah, if you see this one, you got to see that one.
Oh yeah,
that's
why
Hulu's paying $6 million for the other one.
I mean, Ben, what did you think when you're sitting here committed to this documentary? You're already all in with this whole thing on Amazing Jonathan, and suddenly there's a second documentary crew showing up. You're being told that they've won 2 Oscars and all this stuff. What the hell did you make of all that?
At that point, I had a choice to make. There's no question about that. And the choice was either give up because I can't compete with Academy Award winning crews. Mm-hmm. I'm an amateur. This is my first documentary I've ever made. You know, they're whatever. So I was either going to give up or I was going to continue. But I needed if a documentary is a medium that's supposed to seek and tell the truth, it would have almost been unethical of me to not show that. I needed to show the whole truth. So if I was going to continue, I needed that to become part of the narrative of the movie. So that's what I decided to do. And I'm happy I did. It was
and
an
you had
experiment.
A lot of money invested in the documentary already too.
I had up till that point and beyond. I was just self financing and just doing it totally on my own. So it was still pretty early on that I could have given up, but I'm a pretty persistent person, and I wanted to see what the next chapter was going to be. And I'm very happy I did, because I think it made for a much more layered, interesting story with humanity and weirdness.
Yeah. Jonathan, did it ever occur to you that this might be problematic, this second documentary for Ben?
No, because like I said, they were about different subjects.
Oh, okay.
You know, one was about me and this kid from Australia. And Ben made the second one about me and him. So neither one of them are about me. They're about me and him and me and Joe.
So there's some synergy there.
Right.
Yeah. There's definitely, there's
somebody's
going to
make one just about me someday.
Well, this one was going to be, but then I needed to do something.
Yeah.
And I made it about also the process. But it's still about you. I think, like I've told you before, and we've had – the conversation with different people is your act, right, isn't just a typical magic act. You deconstructed each each magic bit is a deconstruction of magic, either for a joke or for some purpose. This movie that we've made is the same thing, but in a documentary. The documentary ultimately deconstructs itself.
Yeah.
So I like to think that this everything that's done in this movie honors your act and what you've done, you know?
Well, there's no arguing about what you've made a great documentary. Everybody says that. So what am I going to say? I mean, I'm glad you made it, and I'm glad it's doing as good as it. Whoever figured, certainly not you and I when we were doing the documentary,
that it was going to be
this big.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
we didn't think that.
We did not.
Yeah, and I want to talk about this deconstructing of magic because, Jonathan, you came about in the 80s just when maybe traditional magic was starting to feel old hat, and you made your name by deconstructing magic and playing around with the conventions of magic. I think of the bits with the linking rings that are already linked, or the rope trick that obviously has a magnet in it, the trick deck of cards, stuff like that. How did you come up with that?
It's stuff that I thought was funny.
Okay.
I just, you know, I would watch magic and go, well, what if he screwed that up?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be funny if he screwed that up? And then I would put it together, you know, and I would go through magic catalogs and look at tricks for sale and purposely screw them up in my head, you know. It just came to me naturally. I mean, I would sit down and write. I would do coke when I was on the road.
No.
This is before meth. Yeah, I would do coke and sit there and write for days at a time, my hand moving almost by itself. Like, I couldn't even get it down. It was coming to me so fast. It was like this vessel in my head opened up, and I was just there to take the notes. I was getting it really would pop in my head out of the blue, like a gift from some, you know.
And there's a lot to play with because there's so many tropes in magic and so many tricks that people have been doing for 100 years now that everyone knows if you've ever been to a magic show in your life.
Right. So, I mean, I liked the way, I didn't want to be a magician because I was bad at it. I was better at being a comedian. So I think that I have a little bit more comedy. So there's some magicians doing some comedy and some comedians doing some magic, but I hit the right blend of it. I hit it right down the center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's nobody but
me and Penn & Teller that really has deconstructed magic like that.
So you don't consider yourself more a magician than a comedian or vice versa? It's about
whoever's
50,
writing
50,
the
huh?
check for whatever.
Yeah, book him for either.
As a magician, I'm a good comic.
Well, how do you look at all of those kind of old tuxedo and top hat magicians like, say, a Harry Blackstone Sr. and those guys? Do you still respect them for what they did, or do you feel like this
kind
of stuffy and old hat?
I respect them to a degree. I never really respected them to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, I never had a magic hero.
Okay.
Steve Martin was my hero for
oh, really?
And he's done the same thing, too, mm-hmm. with magic. He's deconstructed magic to be mm-hmm. funny. So, no, I never had a hero like that. My heroes were Alice Cooper and Steve Martin, and it never was a magician.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to think who would have been the magicians when you were growing up that were famous
then.
To me,
like, you go into your house and you have those old magic posters.
I love the way they look.
And you love coming to the castle.
I wasn't fans.
You love going to Magic Live. Like, you seem, you do have a love for
I love magic. I love good magic now. I mean, I see these kids in the way. I love magic. Don't get me wrong. I just, they're not my heroes.
Right.
I'm their heroes. All these magicians that are so great right now, I have no talent, and I walk into the room and they're fawning on me. I'm like, how can this be possible?
Well, yeah, and you came up in the 80s when, I don't know, it seems like magic had kind of begun to jump the shark. You had people like Orson Welles doing magic and stuff like that. So it was probably ripe for this kind of parody.
And there was a million different comedy shows on TV at that time.
Right,
there was Evening at the Improv and Caroline's and Comic Strip Live. And none of those shows had comic magicians on them.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the only one on there. And I did every one of them, you know. I did 24 Comic Strip Lives. I did 8 Arsenio Halls, and I did only comic magician to be on Letterman, you know. So I had it made. TV was right and left.
Yeah.
As soon as I started playing Vegas and stopped doing TV, that's when I think I lost my draw, you know, a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
But when you're in Vegas for 13 years, people forget who you are when you're not in Vegas. It's like being in a black hole, you know.
Yeah.
I'm making millions of dollars.
Money, yeah.
I'm making millions of dollars, but when I came out of Vegas mm-hmm. to play clubs again, I didn't have the draw I used to have. So it was kind of odd for me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of the gags that I can recall from your act, they kind of involve playing a prank on an audience member, some kind of audience participant, like I think of the peanut can trick.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, where you have to kind of, I have to imagine, anticipate the audience member's moves. Is there a psychological component to
this?
Yeah,
there's very, I mean, I'm a practical joker, so I'm busy. When I'm not on stage, I'm planning chess moves with practical jokes. Yeah. Like if I do this, he's going to think this. So I got to go around that and make it so it's not obvious. Yeah. And I'm always playing chess in my head against people. If somebody says, oh, I hate this, I remember that. Mm-hmm. I hate spiders. Really, ching, that's locked in my brain. You hate spiders. The next time I see you, I'll be sure to bring a spider and put it somewhere in your sandwich or something, a fake one, you know. So my mind just works like that. It's really set to be a practical joke and to do... think ahead.
It's kind of like this with this documentary, I think. How much of this did you kind of have gamed out in your head?
The only thing I had gamed out in my head is to tease Ben that the other crew were there and he wasn't. And I knew that while it discouraged him, it made him hungry to keep going too. You know,
that's true.
Yeah,
anytime you like make fun of me, I actually also appreciate.
Yeah,
sensibility
you seem to
that we
kind
share.
Of enjoy it.
Yeah, like a lot of people don't know Ben's gay, and so when I tell them that, people exactly. that they're shocked by it, and I'm like,
you're talking about that Ben, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But to your point of chess, right? What I've been kind of talking to some other people about is there is an element of this of our documentary. There's an element of story chess. Where Jonathan makes a move, right? And he tells me that there's actually going to be another crew filming a documentary on him. Okay, now it's my time to counter. How am I going to react to that? And then ultimately, I counter with making that part of the movie. And this goes, there's many elements of Jonathan makes a move. Okay, how's Ben going to counter this? How is he going to whatever? And then how's Jonathan going to counter that move? Like, it's kind of...
Well, you won that chess game with the ending. You came up with
the ending,
checkmate.
Let's not give that away.
We're not going to give it away. People got to see it.
He's not worried that I just outed him. He's worried about the ending to his documentary.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll bet. And it's funny to me that, Jonathan, you say that you're not much of a magician because I know that you're friends and sort of a mentor, I guess, to Chris Angel.
Yeah.
You even sold him the rights to some of your creations.
Well,
when I retired
and I knew I wasn't going to perform anymore, then I didn't want this material to just be stolen or given away for free.
Sure.
Chris offered to buy it, and he also took my assistant, Tanya. He took her as well. That character
really?
Put it in his show for years. So he got half of my act at least.
It makes me think of like Keller sold his act to Thurston.
They used
Thurston
to do
sold
that
his
back
act
then.
To Blackstone.
They used to sell their whole act.
Yeah, and then they would bill it
they
as
would crown,
Blackstone
they,
performing Thurston's tricks and stuff.
Really?
Like
they would
that.
Crown one magician as the king. That's why there's competition among Copperfield hates Chris Angel because there's not room for
is
two.
Is that true?
Yeah. And there's not room for two kings. There's only one king.
Do they do that in any other
plate spinners? Do plate spinners have that?
Right, like comedians. Like would Marc Maron do Seinfeld? that doesn't exist.
Magicians are so unique.
There was
a turn of the century musician like Chung Ling Soo, who was like this Englishman pretending to be a Chinese magician, and then there was a real Chinese magician, and they had this huge rivalry, and one of them died when someone like rigged their bullet catch or something.
Yeah,
and they had this rivalry for years.
No.
Like magicians are insane.
Yeah,
like
we are. They're really insane.
Yeah,
they're really really
competitive, right?
They're jealous. Yeah. Everybody's jealous of Chris Angel and says how bad he is, because he's at the top of his game, you know.
Right.
And you must make an interesting pair because, he comes off, at least from my perception, as very intense and very serious. And you, Jonathan, are totally the opposite of that.
I am, but he has another side to him that people don't see.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he wanted to be funny in his show, so I took him aside and showed him how to be funny. And now I wrote lines for him. I showed him how to deliver those lines. Half the stuff he bought from me doesn't work for him.
Oh, really?
So he can't do it because he can't deliver it right. But he's getting better and better at doing it. Now he's getting really good at it. So, it can be taught. Funny can be taught.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is easier to teach, funny or magic?
Magic's easier to teach. More practice on magic. But funny is, there's a certain way. Look, you're saying it wrong, Chris. You got to say it. Put the pause here and take your time with it.
Yeah.
You know? And that's... It's I wanted it to go to the right people. You know, my act is probably the most stolen act in history of magic. Yeah. There's people in England making more money than I made with my act.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And my wife is a Nazi. She goes after him. You know, she goes after him and threatens to sue him. And
I have noticed that Anna takes to social media and can be very effective.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. She's scary.
Can
man.
You patent a magic trick? Does that?
No, you can't. How do you deal with something like that? You can't patent a magic trick. No, you can't. But there's a small community of people that will come down on your head and say, you're not going to ever work the castle. You're never going to do this. You're never going to do that.
Yeah.
That's my wife. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, comedy must be easier because now that I think about it, I think Penn Jillette once said that magic is the only art where you can buy an act.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can just buy a magic
Act. Carlos Mencia. Look at, he stole his act, and Joe Rogan came after him, and now he can't work anymore.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
You know?
Well, after going through this whole crazy journey together, how would you two describe your relationship now?
It's the same as it's always been. We always had a good relationship with Ben from day one. You know, there was a time I didn't call him back for a while because I wanted him to figure out how he was going to end the documentary.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't going anywhere with it. And the last few times he came out to visit me were fruitless. And I could tell he didn't know how he was going to end it. He was waiting for me to die, you know. So I just let him figure
it out. Totally
it's totally true. And I just let him figure it out for himself, and he did. By me not calling him, he got worried about his documentary, his baby.
Ben, were you waiting for him to die?
No, no. Okay. But honestly, when you set out to make a documentary about an artist and a person who is dying, that's a reality that's going to happen. I was not waiting for that to happen to have an ending.
Yeah.
But that bullshit. I knew that, like, literally, I filmed tons of conversations about us discussing that. Of like,
what about you telling me I had to choke on a piece of chicken at a table and I have a heart attack and die?
That would have been a good ending.
Yeah.
But no, I think to talk about Jonathan and I's relationship, it's from day one, from the first time I met you, we quickly fell into this friendship that is pretty much like he's like my older brother and I'm the kid brother, and he kind of likes to make fun of me and pick and prod and like make fun of me. And that's the dynamic we've fallen into. And just, you know, he's pranked me 3 times already today, scaring me and coming out of the bathroom.
There's nothing serious about a relationship. Like, there's nothing serious about any of my relationships, even with my wife. It's all just fun and games.
There were stakes and there was a struggle throughout making this movie, but we're good.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, Jonathan, you got a lot of years in you. Before we wrap up here, I just have to ask, whenever you do go, whether it's 40 years from now or 5 years from now, whatever, how do you want to go and how do you want to be remembered?
I'll tell you that when I come back.
Oh,
what's real, what's not.
All right. Well, the Amazing Jonathan documentary is available on Hulu beginning Friday, August 16th. The Amazing Jonathan and Ben Berman, thanks for sitting down with me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks again to The Amazing Jonathan and Ben Berman for coming on the show. The Amazing Jonathan documentary is available on Hulu beginning Friday, August 16th. Keep up with The Amazing Jonathan at TheAmazingJonathan.com or on Twitter at TheAmazingJ. And follow Ben Berman on Twitter at LipsBerman. Folks, when I sit down to binge watch my favorite TV show or catch up on the newest episode, it's always better with a pint of Ben & Jerry's. My wife's favorite TV treat is a classic, Cherry's Garcia. But for me, it's got to be chocolate fudge brownie or chocolate chip cookie dough. Because really, they're like getting 2 desserts in one. You get ice cream and brownies, or ice cream and chocolate chip cookies. What's better than that? So cozy up with your favorite flavor, available anywhere ice cream is sold. Or find a new favorite at BenJerry.com. That's BenJerry.com. Hey folks, we all know the consequences of driving drunk, but it's also never okay to drive stoned. When you do that, you put yourself and others in danger. A DUI covers more than just alcohol. Drugs that make you feel different will make you drive different, and you could get a DUI. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. It's simple. Drive high, get a DUI. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there.
5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickassNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.